Fred Hayes is associate professor of political science at Union College. He's a specialist in American political institutions, not the least of which is the Supreme Court. Hey, Brad, we haven't heard much about the Supreme Court, the upcoming term. A lot of older people on that Supreme Court right now, and the potential for Donald Trump being able to name several others is right up there.
I suppose, you know, we'll see. It's one of those that every year we have rumors about retirement, and we've heard about it from Kennedy, and of course, you know, Ginsburg is the eldest justice at present. So you know, you hear about it, but I'm not sure that there's much beyond that. I haven't seen anything that's credible beyond the standard rumor mill. So we'll see about retirements. One of the things that is really important when we're thinking about the influence of Trump on the federal judiciary or lower court confirmations for a variety of reasons. Part of it's a strategy by the Republican Party to hold up as many of the appointments as they could before Trump got into office. But another part's just actually kind of the natural pattern of retirements is that there's been some studies of this, and it is expected by the end of the 4 years that Trump may be able to appoint as much as 50% of the lower federal judiciary, meaning the district courts and the U.S. courts of appeal.
So let's remember, of course, that the way this works is that the senior senator of the same party as the president really gets to make the nomination. So this is very important.
So one of the things that's very interesting is that Mitch McConnell last week said that the processing of blue slips, which is this form that senators can submit to the Judiciary Committee upon the nomination of someone from their home state, that says I basically approve or disapprove. It was supposed to give them some kind of influence, maybe even a full veto, depending on where we are in history. It's been used in different ways. McConnell's basically said that practice we're getting rid of. We're no longer going to do blue slipping, and we're just going to push this through. In other words, he wants to eliminate the influence of home state senators, which is thought to be an effort to control the process more by the party than by the state senators, right? And rather an effort to kind of centralize power under party leadership. So it's an effort by them to create greater influence in a process where the Republicans are already highly influential. And so we may well see in the coming years significant influence by the Trump administration over the federal judiciary in terms of its personnel. And those who have studied this know that there's essentially a lag effect on the judiciary administrations and what we might call partisan regimes. So if, in fact, a party is in control for some period of time, their commitments carry forward over the next 20 to 30 years over the judiciary. And because of the ways in which Trump has kind of lucked into this period where there's going to be a large number expected retirements in the federal judiciary, that influence will be magnified in some ways. And so we may well be dealing with a Trump judiciary well beyond the Trump administration.
Okay, while we're on the subject, we've heard from a number of august publications that the president of the United States is doing the very unusual thing of interviewing for open jobs. You'll remember he fired Preet Bharara, and now he's interviewing somebody for that job, Brooklyn and Virginia, which is where he has all of his businesses. What do you make of that?
On the one hand, he does everything unconventionally.
Yes, he does.
And so I would say that this is just akin to that. Do I think it's a good thing? No, I do not. I think this is an area where you want to have the work done largely by the DOJ, by the White House administration itself, that are experts in these particular areas, so that you're going to get not just somebody that you like, not somebody that you think will do a good job as you understand it, but you want professional experts on that, even ones that you've appointed in your own administration. It's not as if you're giving up control there. But the idea is, let the experts handle this, and then you get the final decision. But a process of interviewing by the president himself feels a little odd, frankly, and particularly given what we know about his business interests, it seems particularly odd and potentially like a conflict of interest.
We have about 4 minutes left in this interview, so I wanted to ask you real quickly, Brad Hayes, about the House budget. You know, this, of course, is something that is going to cause a lot of consternation for an awful lot of people. They can only lose 2 votes in the Senate. So what happens here?
Well, so this is a good question. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, that they simply need to hold the coalition together. But the budget itself is closely linked to the effort on taxes.
Sure.
Right. And so the degree to which we saw, you know, that very slim margin that you mentioned for the House budget resolution suggests that this is going to be extremely tricky and that, you know, on things like
deduction of state and local taxes.
Yeah, deduction of state and local taxes or the 401k, right? That's very much an issue. The effect on the middle class. This is what I think we're going to be hearing about a lot in the coming days, right? Democrats are going to be beating this drum. Republicans are going to be countering about, you know, we're here to protect the middle class. Well,
so they've already given I'm sorry, Brad, but they've already given up on a couple of these.
Well, so the SALT deduction, right? Yeah. I mean, like there's one where they're like, well, that's going to affect the middle class, so now maybe we'll take that off the table.
And Trump has already said, go ahead.
No, that's right. For the 401k, he said, no, we can't touch that. Well, but that was also a huge deduction in this process. And so it is going to be extraordinarily difficult for them to knit together a budget and this tax deduction at the same time. And so the whole thing may well fall apart and have to be done separately, as in if, in fact, the effort on tax reform fails, they may have to then revisit the budget itself thereafter.
So I want to talk to you about the opioid crisis. We only have 2 minutes, but tell me, has the president played that correctly? Politically?
As a matter of policy, no. I mean, he declared a national emergency, which is probably a good thing, but it had almost no direct effect. I mean, the amount of money that it freed up is embarrassing. It does give federal agencies a little bit more flexibility in terms of what they've done. But I mean, I think let me take a step back and reflect on this. The declaring an emergency under the Public Health Services Act is probably a good thing, but it does invite thinking about past drug problems that the country has faced and the way that we've addressed those, right? Thinking about the war on drugs of the 1980s and 1990s, the response there was to criminalize the problem and address it through law enforcement, right? In fact, there were, you know, rather shameful laws that were clearly targeting persons of color and created a racialized drug policy. But, you know, the opioid crisis is different, right? It's disproportionately a white problem in the United States. It does not mean that it doesn't affect persons of various racial and ethnic backgrounds, but it has had a disproportionate effect on the white population, and again, a more rural population. And as a consequence, right, it's not surprising that we see Trump do something, but he should have done more, right? Free up more federal resources, or at least ask Congress to fund it, right? In fact, the funding side is coming from Democrats, not from Republicans. There's a bill that was introduced by Democrats in the Senate. I think it was 14 Democrats and Angus King, an independent from Maine, that would free up about, I think, $45 billion to combat the opioid crisis. And that's what you need. You have to have funding.
It's always wonderful to have the brilliant Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, with us. Brad, we'll always love it when you come around because you put things so that we can all understand them. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Alan.